Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again. Today's main topic, speak out. Is it time to change our gun control laws? We also reflect on Ann Romney's You People comments, George Zimmerman's interview with Hannity on Fox, and much, much more. The phone lines are open to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. But before we get started, I'd like to bring on the star of the show and my co-host, Jima Hill Cook. Now, Jima is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First up, today's main topic is about gun control. There's no secret about it. I pose the simple question, is it time to change our gun control laws? Of course, this is in the wake of the most recent horrific events in Colorado perpetrated by James Holmes. Now, allegedly, James Holmes purchased 4 guns and more than 6,000 rounds of ammunition in an effort that has left at least 12 people dead. There are reports that an estimated 30 more people remain hospitalized. 11 of them are in critical condition. It is now estimated that around 58 people were injured, most of them by gunfire, but a handful during the ensuing chaos. Now, I want you to take a moment to listen to the 911 tapes, and it's pretty graphic and in detail. But after the 911 tapes, I want you to weigh in, Jim. I want you to kind of talk about, you know what you were feeling. What are your thoughts about this particular situation? So take a listen.
For a shooting at Century Theaters, 14300 East Alameda Avenue.
They're saying somebody's shooting in the auditorium. 315 and 314, there is at least one person that's been shot, but they're saying there's hundreds of people just running around.
316, be advised. Think somebody's friends and gas over here, too. 316, I need a rescue in here hot, too. I got a guy shot.
And inside of Theater 9?
Just outside of Theater 9.
Team 6, we got another person outside shot in the leg, a female. I got people running out of the theater. They're shot in room 9.
318, we also have another victim on the north side of this theater in the parking lot.
I'm being told that he's in Theater 9. From what I'm smelling inside, I can... It sounds like it's OC maybe, too. Get us some damn gas masks for Theater 9. We can't get in it.
14, we have a party in the car shot. Plate 240, John Zebra, Ida, it's Kia, white Kia.
Okay, copy. There's another victim in the white Kia. Where is that vehicle at?
16 Adam, I need a marked car behind the theater, Sable side. The suspect in a gas mask. 11, hold the air 1 second. Cars with that white car in the rear of the lot. Is that a suspect? Yes, we got rifles, gas masks. He's detained right now. I've got an open door going into the theater. Okay, hold that position. Hold your suspect. 16, I got 7 down in Theater 9. 7 down. Week of 25, everybody on this. It's an assault rifle. We have a magazine down inside, so everybody watch out for the assault rifle.
All right, for the guy still in Theater 9, I'm working on the backboard right now for that female.
Okay, suspect is going to be a male, unknown race, black camo type outfit. I believe to be wearing a vest, gas mask, and multiple long guns.
Now, of course, those were the 911 tapes of the Colorado massacre. And without a shadow of a doubt, our hearts go out to all of the victims and their family members. But, Jima, this was definitely a tragedy. What are your thoughts about the events that occurred?
Yeah, it's almost hard to even listen to those tapes. That was actually my first time hearing them. And I now know why I wasn't in such a big hurry to him. It just seemed so chaotic, and you could hear even in the, I guess those were some of the first responders, their anxiety as well. So you can never really prepare for something like that until you're right there in the midst of it and it's happening. And it's just sad. I mean, I really don't know any other words to say but sad. I mean, we've become a nation who say we're founded on such Christian principles, and yet we've become such savages. And we cling more to our guns than we do to the Word of God, whom we say we love and adore.
You know, you talked about the chaos that was obviously throughout the entire 911 tapes, and the fact that as a police officer, I know it's kind of hard for them to fathom that, you know, the assailant would have tear gas. The assailant would have assault rifles, multiple handguns. Has a bulletproof vest and Kevlar on. All of these things that you would encounter when you're in a combat scenario, as opposed to a theater scenario. As a first responder, can you imagine what the police were going through when they see this? When they saw
No. Right, no, I can't, because you don't know if it's one person or five people, and so how do you respond and protect, not even knowing if there was more people inside the movie theater or if there were more people hanging around the perimeter waiting to attack even more. So that, I mean, you know, that's a pretty scary pretty scary place for them to have been. And yet they were able to manage it all. I mean, but just imagine if there had been more than one shooter, if there had been more than one person there that was causing such harm.
Yeah.
How would they have responded, you know?
Yeah. So after Columbine, the massacre at Fort Hood, Virginia Tech, and not to mention the killing spree in Chicago and many other terrible tragedies around the U.S. Is it time to change our gun control laws? What do you think about that?
Well, it's time, but I don't know if this is the time to have a conversation, but it is time. It's past time. I mean, you know, I've been faithfully listening to Reverend Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Push Coalition meetings that he has on Saturday mornings now for the past 10 years or more. And every week he talks about this gun store that's located right there in the community and how they have been trying to get this gun store closed. So this isn't a new issue. And Chicago, as we know, has been out of control this entire year. We're in the seventh month, and I think they've had well over 200 and some odd homicides, people being shot. And yet there's not as much of an outcry as I would like to see, not only for Chicago, but any place where people are dying at the hands of guns unnecessarily. I mean, where you wasn't protecting yourself from somebody else. You just walked in a room or walked into a school or into a hospital or to a town hall meeting that, as with Representative Giffords when she was down in Arizona. I mean, what is that all about? Why is it that we cannot have sensible dialogue around guns in this time when we've had so much evidence that access to them is too easy? We're not saying you don't have a right to bear whatever that means, but you know, they want to hold on to whatever's in the Constitution and what's in the Second Amendment and all of these things. But there's a lot of things that's in the Constitution that we've amended, and so this we need to make some adjustments because too many people are dying, and for any same person, Republican, Democrat, green or purple, you have to have some sensibility to this, and I'm just not seeing it. I don't know how one organization, the NRA, can have so much power and so much control over a whole nation of people. I don't understand that. How is it that we are being held hostage by the NRA?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because arguments around the Second Amendment supporters say that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And so some owners believe that all people should have the ability to possess whatever arms they wish, even assault weapons. But proponents of the Second Amendment should really consider this. No right is absolute. Free speech is an example. I mean, you hear people talk about it all the time that, you know, I have my First Amendment right for free speech. But you just can't go out and lie on people. So there are restrictions. You can't yell fire in a theater. So there are restrictions. So in a similar fashion, one would consider the Second Amendment to also have restrictions. And those restrictions being assault weapons, hand grenades. I mean, if you consider the absolute case, and if a person wanted the right to bear arms or as the Second Amendment says, should keep and bear arms shall not be infringed upon, then why not go out and buy go out and buy tanks or go out and buy those weapons, those shoulder-fired weapons or bazookas or anything like that. And so this notion that people just have to have these arms and as many as they want is ludicrous to me.
I agree, and I think also the other problem with that is that I need someone to give me a logical argument why a regular person would need to have an assault rifle. But I mean, what do we use assault rifles for? What was their intended purpose for? And if whatever you are getting it for does not meet the intended purpose, then you should not be able to have it.
Right.
It should be. I mean, I'm just trying to figure it out. You
it's
know,
not part of your occupation, or you got
right.
some you know, compelling reason to own an assault rifle. It should not be something that the ordinary people could own.
Right. And how do you just go online and buy the amount of ammunition and as you were saying, you know, the hand grenades and how is that legal to do that?
You know,
I mean, there's so. Right, we get caught up in so many of the little things that we're not practicing good common sense. And there's no need for any person to need an assault rifle. There's no need for any sane person to need to have a high need to go and buy 6,000 rounds of ammunition. That's just not logical.
So speaking of 6,000 rounds of ammunition, I want to play something from you for you, and I want to get you to respond. And this is something that's classic. So take a listen.
You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. $5,000 for a bullet. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders. See it? See it? Every time somebody gets shot, they be like, damn, he must have did something. Then they put $50,000 worth of bullets in his ass.
Now, although Chris Rock was being, you know, facetious, funny, it's a lot of truth in what he's saying.
I agree. I think, you know, if gun control and guns is the issue that we can't get people to move on, then let's move on what we can get people to move on. And maybe we can move on the cost of bullets. And I mean, you know, so we're not messing with your guns, but it's going to cost you a lot more to shoot that gun because of the amount, how much it's going to cost the bullet. So he might be on to something. And
exactly right.
It might, you know, sometimes we have to change the messaging and not make it be about gun control, but make it be about something else. You know, we change the wording and maybe people will buy into it a little better.
As Chris Rock put it, bullet control, not gun control. And so speaking about the people, I like what is Keith Boykin wrote on Twitter the other day. Here's what he said. I'm tired of having the same old debates after every tragedy. It's time to be the change we want to see in the world. My mom lives in Texas, and she and her husband have several guns. I live in NYC in Miami, and I have no guns. I won't live my life in fear. I want to see the Dark Knight rises last night and kept thinking something might happen in the theater. But I refuse to live my life in fear. Stop complaining about how screwed up our system is and start changing it. We have the power. When Americans stop being afraid of one another and learn to live in love, our leaders will stop being afraid of the NRA. We will be a nation that values love and community, or we will be a nation that values fear and selfishness. In a democracy, we, the people, are responsible for the values and priorities we set as a nation. We hide behind the Constitution instead of understanding that we, the people, created the Constitution and we have the power to change it. Why do Americans have a right to an assault rifle but no right to health care? Is it because we, the people, allowed it to happen? The problem with gun violence is not Romney, Obama, our broken system, or even the NRA. They are symptoms of a bigger problem. We, the people. Now, Jimmy, there was a lot packaged in that Twitter feed, but I want you to weigh in on this. We hide behind the Constitution instead of understanding that we, the people, created the Constitution. We have the power to change it. Your thoughts?
We do have the power to change it, but unless we elect the right people that have the same mindset that we do, we won't change it. So we elect our representatives every 2 years and our senators every 6 years, and yet nothing has happened substantial around gun control in 30 years. I mean, nothing. Nothing has happened. And so why is that? But yet we've allowed, as Keith Boykin stated, ourselves to hide behind words on a piece of paper that can be changed. Not that I'm disrespecting the Constitution, because I'm not, but we're in a different time. And who better than we, the people, to make a push, not infringing upon anybody else's right? I don't have a desire to take your guns away from sane people that are responsible. But I do want to limit access to people who have mental health issues, who got some post-traumatic stress that they haven't dealt with just yet. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do to a little bit more challenging for a person to get a gun. I mean, we know we can do it because they're making all the changes to the voter ID laws.
Right.
We know you can change laws.
That's right.
Right. I mean, come on now, people. We know we can change laws, and we know you can do it quickly. I mean, you know, in 2 years, 26 states and upended voter ID. 26 states, that's over half of the states that have done something. So you mean to tell me that we can't find some states to make some laws a little bit tougher as it relates to gun control in their state or ammunition control, whatever, you know, a longer waiting period before you are allowed to have a weapon, do a little background check. I mean, there has to be something that we can do that's going to have an impact. And so let's say, I mean, you're looking at all the, you know, we're talking about the legal weapons, but let's look at all the illegal guns out there on the street. There's probably more illegal guns out on the street than there are legal. How? And so because everybody has a right to bear arms, we're not even talking about controlling that.
I have to agree with you. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jima, doesn't this speak volumes about our priorities in the United States? I mean, what's important to us? Obviously, this is not an important issue that affects the majority of Americans. If it was, we would do something about it.
No, you know what it speaks to on a larger scale? It speaks to our mindset of, it's not bothering me, so whatever. I don't live in a place where I need to be that concerned about gun violence, so I'm not that concerned. Or on the flip side of that, we become a nation of greed, and so the lobbyists know what our levels of greed are, and so they play into that. So you get extra money under the table if you're an elected official, or you turn a blind eye if you happen to be a police officer or some other sort of law enforcement person. And so, you know, they've just played right into the psyche of, it's not in my backyard, so I really don't care. And so, I mean, you take a look at, when you look at the movement, so to speak, that was prevailing for so long, in the anti-gay and lesbian community, of people just being dogmatic about, you know, their thoughts and things along that nature, and how they used that, you know, it wasn't in their backyard, so nobody really cared about it. Then all of a sudden, when it came in their backyard, now all of a sudden it's wrong, it's evil, you're going to hell. I mean, you know, they had all these things to say about it because they wanted to keep it where it was. They didn't want it to be in their backyard. So now that we've had a blow up, now here's the thing. We've had it at a high school in Colorado. You had it now in a public place with Representative Giffords. You had it at Virginia Tech. Now you had it in a place where everybody can go. So maybe those places were considered a little bit elitist, you know, colleges and town hall places. Okay, now you're at a movie theater on a Thursday night with your family. Now you have to be concerned as to whether or not a crazy person's going to come in and shoot up the movie theater. Now you're hypervigilant, which I am anyway, about coming and going, and why is that door open and it's the exit door. Now you're looking around, much like you did after 9/11 when you're sitting in the airport seeing who's getting on your flight, or maybe that's just me, you know, and checking to see how many people coming on with backpacks because of the latest. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So now it has crossed over into everyday life people. I'm at a movie theater that I may have gotten passes, you know, that I didn't even pay for my ticket. So now I'm in a movie theater, and now it's in my face. I can no longer say that it's not in my backyard because now it is.
Right.
So I've got to do something. And agreeing with Keith Boykin, we the people, we must do something. We have to.
I have to agree with you. It's time for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to keep the conversation going. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have... have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday. And I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Hello, Reverend Al.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Jim, I want to kind of close out this section, but I want to get you to weigh in. Any final comments on the Colorado shootings?
I do know that I think sometime later today the president is headed out in that direction to speak with some of the families of the victims and some of the victims themselves. So I find that to be encouraging during this time when there's just so much unanswered questions. And I think I hope we don't overly politicize what happened in terms of where does it fall into the politics of the office of presidency. I think him going there is something he's supposed to do. It would have been great. I know I live in fantasy land sometimes, but it would have been great if he and Mitt Romney had done a joint statement together in Colorado. I think that really would have done a lot to heal that community there if they had been able to show up there together. That's what I was hoping for, but I guess it's not going to happen. But I just hope we keep those families in prayer and we even keep the perpetrator, because he obviously got some issues. that needs to be addressed, and I pray that he gets what he needs, and that we allow him the full response of our judicial system, and that we allow him to go through the process, whether we agree or disagree, and whether or not the facts are all there or not. You know, this is what makes America the country that she is, and so I just hope that nothing happens to him before he has his day in court, and that the families the victims can start some sort of healing today.
You know, what strikes me as interesting about the two points you made there, one, President Obama, and then two, about James. And I want to talk a little bit about both of those real quick before we switch over to our next segment. And there will be some talk, and it just is the way that people's minds are. They try to politicize everything. But there will be people that say President Obama was quick to run to Colorado but was not quick to go to Chicago after all the shootings week in and week out. Now, what do you say to people that's going to be bringing that issue up?
Well, if that was the case, he'd be in Chicago every day. He'd be in Chicago every weekend. He'd be in a major city every weekend. And at some point, it's an argument that I hear. It's one that will probably get a spin for a couple of days because he is from Chicago, and yet he hasn't, I don't think, officially made any statements about the numbers of killings and shootings that have happened in that city. Do I think he should? At first, I didn't. I didn't think it was his place. But now that things have gone on for the length of time that it has, I think he does need to have something to say. If not in a press conference, make a written statement, and I don't know, but he has to address it. The problem is, this goes back to what we've stated on so many different occasions, is that when he makes a statement that is specific directly towards black people, there's backlash on both sides. There's backlash from black people. Who does he think he is? Like he did a couple years ago when he did the speech or the sermon or whatever at the church on Father's Day. You know, the backlash he got from, like, he was, you know, trying to tell black men what they need to do. So he got that backlash from the church and from people. And then the other part of it is, well, should he be going into the community saying those sorts of things? Last year when he spoke in front of the Congressional Black Caucus and the backlash he got from telling some, not necessarily those in the room, but he knew the speech was going to be heard by so many people. You know, we need to take off our slippers and go put our boots on and do some work. Well, I know a whole lot of people that are sitting around their slippers and they ain't doing nothing. So I knew he wasn't talking to me, but I knew at least two or three people in which he was talking to. So then he got backlash from that from both sides. So, I mean, you know, if he goes to Chicago or Philadelphia or Detroit or wherever, you know, Kansas City for that matter, and makes a statement about the violence, you know, it's a calculated risk, and he has to determine if during this part of the election cycle, if it's worth it, you know, and it can't hurt him to go to Colorado. The fact that they suspended their campaigns in terms of the ads they were showing in Colorado through the weekend, and he's done some other things. But this speaks to who he's been through his whole presidency. I mean, he was there for the memorial service down in Arizona when Gabby Giffords was shot, spoke at the memorial. He went to Joplin, Missouri during the tornado. He just left wherever the fires were in Colorado a couple weeks ago. He was there. So for every tragedy that has happened over the course of his presidency, he's been there. The question is, and this is a question that the people in the community have to answer, as well as the people that are in elected positions, when did drive-by shootings not become a tragedy? When did they become commonplace that we just don't even talk about it? That's the question.
You know, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
That we have to answer, yeah.
Yeah, and I know a lot of the response will be, you know, he was his response time to these type of tragedies that you mentioned, Gaffney Gifford, you talked about the Colorado incident just happened, but it took him a little bit longer to talk about Trayvon Martin, and he hasn't come out about Chicago. yet. And so there will be some talk about his response time and about how he prioritized things when it comes to the African-American community. Now, I understand that he's done a lot, and I understand the politics. But at the same time, when you have morals and values and the things that you believe in, you have to take a calculated risk and say, hey, this is important to me, important enough to me that I got to address this. And I think the hesitation that most people have when supporting him on these type of issues is because the perception is he doesn't respond in a timely manner to African-American issues a lot of the times.
And I agree with that. But at the same token, I think the pastor made this comment today about when it's time to go and do something. Let's say we're cleaning up the church or whatever, and I'm telling you to go clean, but I'm not down there cleaning up. So how is it that I expect the president of the United States to come in my community and police my community and make a statement about what needs to happen, and I'm not doing it? And I'm right there in the community. And the
I agree.
And the person that I know who just did the drive-by is right next door to me, but I'm not calling the police on them because I'm not a snitch. I mean, so, you know, I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I agree that before this election cycle is over, he's going to have to make a statement to black people about a black people issue. He's not going to be able not to do that. The last time around, we had the whole race speech. I don't know if that's what we need, but he's going to have to come out and speak directly to black people, not people of color. We don't want it, you know, folded up in that box. He's going to have to come and speak directly to black people about an issue that is more prevalent in our community than anywhere else. It can't be the general, because we've been recipients and beneficiaries of everything that he's done. I'm not discounting that, but I agree he's going to have to come out and make a bold statement, and maybe he'll do it this week coming up at the National Urban League Conference. Maybe he'll speak to those issues in that setting. I'm hoping that he says something that directly talks about what's happening in Chicago and Philadelphia and Detroit. And the thing with Trayvon, you got to remember, you know, he gave the Justice Department the go-ahead to go down there too. So that was indirect. And then when he made the statement, that was more direct. And so we have to wait and see. But I think he's going to – he knows, because he's – just for the same reason what you just said, that it seems that he's a little slow on the draw, which I can understand that, because he'll get it on either side. To respond to those issues that are more germane to black people. But I think he's not going to have a choice before this summer is out. Before this summer is out, he will have to have made a statement, some sort of bold something that speaks directly to black people.
You know, you mentioned the fact that, you know, people going into the neighborhoods before the president going out there. And I'm glad to see the fruit. And for those who don't know the fruit, now, that's the army of men known as of the Nation of Islam. And so the fruit is now taken to the street of Chicago, the south side of Chicago, to hopefully curtail a lot of the shootings that are happening on Chicago. So I'm glad to see them out there. So, you know, hopefully this will be a catalyst for the president to come out and say something. And I think he acknowledged them, but I think he needs to do more. So the second issue that we were talking about, you said with respect to the president being out there and the issue about the young man. I wonder if this guy, and I wonder why they portray him to be this intellectual as opposed to being a terrorist, because I don't understand how they people define terrorism, and they're quick to judge or quick to title people of certain ethnic backgrounds or racial makeups terrorists when they do activities like this, but they don't do the same thing for a McVeigh or for this guy or for anybody else that was in, you know, that was involved in Virginia Tech shooting, why do you don't categorize them as terrorists as they do anybody from a Muslim culture?
Because they've decided to define terrorists as based on some sort of religion and someone's connection to a religion. And so when not to be offensive, but when white people do things that of this magnitude, then something had to push them over the edge, or they had to, especially white males, they were mad at the government. Like, that's okay. They're mad about something. Something got them so angry that they felt like that was the only thing they can do. And so they will, it would be excused away. You look at, you know, the Oklahoma City bombers, excused away. You look at Columbine, excused away because he was bullied or he was, I mean, you know, there were some, not by the masses, but there were some that wanted to make it not be as bad because of whatever it was they were dealing with. But when it comes to the other side, when you look at the guy that did the shootings, was it here at Fort Hood or whatever, immediately he was a terrorist. Before mm-hmm. they even, just based on his name, he was a terrorist.
Exactly right.
Based purely on his name, he was a terrorist. And so that's the only reason. I mean, we can dress it up and you know, put lipstick on it. But at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is, and it's the elephant in the middle of the room.
And everything that James Holmes did was terrorism. I mean, for him going out and tear gas and booby traps and booby trapping his apartment and setting timers off and IEDs, that is all terroristic behavior.
And he planned it. This wasn't somebody just woke up Thursday morning and decided what he was going to do. He'd been buying ammunition over the internet for months. He'd been, you know, they said earlier he had been denied a gun by some gun store owner because of his erratic behavior. Well, mm-hmm. why didn't you call the police on this person,
right,
the gun store owner? I mean, you know, why didn't you say, I got somebody here trying to buy a gun and I don't think he wrapped too tight? Then somebody could have, you know, could have been watching him or something, and maybe Thursday night wouldn't have happened because he would have been under surveillance. I mean, but because, and I would venture to say that if the person had been non-white, he probably would have called somebody on him.
Yeah. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. We also have a chat room out there open. So I want to shift the conversation to now to another violent gun crime. And this one, of course, everybody know that alleged killer George Zimmerman sat down with Hannity on Wednesday for his first interview since shooting and killing an unarmed Florida teenager in late February. And I want you to listen to the interview that he gave, and I want you to listen how the interview was conducted. And Jimmy, I want you to weigh in on this. We talked about this in the past, and so now he's coming out. So take a listen.
And tonight, in an interview that you will only see right here on Hannity, George Zimmerman, the man charged with second-degree murder of Trayvon Martin, breaks his silence. Now, earlier today, I traveled to Seminole County, Florida, where Zimmerman is currently free on bail and awaiting trial. And for the first time, both he and his attorney, Mark O'Mara, they discussed what happened the night of that tragic shooting, the aftermath, and what lies ahead for them. In this exclusive interview, they go through the events of that night, and they straighten out the record about internet rumors involving me. And George delivers a message to the Martin family and to you, the American people. A lot of time has passed since this incident with Trayvon. How do you feel about it now that you've had some time to reflect on what has happened?
I haven't really had the time to reflect on it. When I was in jail, obviously I was in solitary confinement, and I had a lot of time to think and reflect. I just think it's a tragic situation, and I hope it's the most difficult thing I'll ever go through in my life. But
let's go back to the night of the shooting. Take us back to that night. You were going to the store. Let's start at the beginning.
I was going to Target to do my weekly grocery shopping. Sunday nights was the only nights. Well, Sunday after we mentored the kids, we would always go grocery shopping and do our cooking for the week. So I wanted to go to Target, and I headed out, and that's the last time I've been home.
Come on, man. There's a lot of footage of this interview, and there was a lot of things going. So I only played a portion of it, the beginning, in fact, and I'll play another portion of it later. But for him to say two things that struck me as odd. He said he hadn't had a lot of time to reflect. Then he goes on right behind it and says, when I was in jail, I had a lot of time to reflect and to think about it. So, again, I mean, he just seems to me to continue to lie every time he opened his mouth and come out in the public. And then the second thing that struck me as odd, when he said that, you know, on Sundays when they go out and that's when he do his shot, then he goes back and say, mentoring the kids. Come on, please. Gina, what is going on here?
Well, I had no desire to hear what George Zimmerman had to say because it doesn't matter to me until he gets in the court of law and he's under oath and he's testifying. That's the only time I'm going to be concerned with anything that comes out of the mouth of George Zimmerman. So having said that, and then he was on Fox News, so with Sean Hannity, I'm pretty sure there wasn't anything he was going to say that was going to be remotely interesting to me. And the fact, and just listening to what you just said, I caught that right away. I was like, well, I thought you just said you hadn't had time.
Exactly.
But now you just said you was in solitary confinement. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, in jail, that's all you have is time. Because
exactly.
You're not doing nothing else. I mean, like you're just sitting around chit-chatting. Not you, and maybe some other people are. But I know you was in solitary confinement. So after all this time, you still don't have nothing to say? You still don't have any sort of real answer to give to that question? And maybe the lawyers are allowing him to paint himself as some sort of pathological liar because, like you stated, everything that comes out of his mouth is questionable. Outside his name being George Zimmerman, there's not too much else I believe about him.
And so here's the problem, right? When you're talking about, and this is what I believe that is happening right now before our eyes. He's not going to testify in a court of law. His defense attorney is not going to let that happen. And so what he's doing is he's giving his side of the story over and over again, at least trying to paint the picture in people's mind of what happened or what he proposed to happen. And so if he continues to do this without being really challenged on any of the real issues, because the truth be told, Hannity didn't challenge him on any question. He kind of built him up and guided him along and tried to set it up for him and threw him a lot of softballs, but he didn't challenge him on practically any question. And so if you're allowed to just talk freely and give your side of the story and you keep saying this lie over and over and over again, or allegedly, then when you get to court, you've already painted a picture in these people's mind that this is what happened, right? Because this is what he said. Because we don't have the other side of the story. We don't know what's on the other side of the story. So now the prosecution has to go out and find this evidence or put together this story without having nobody in their court to tell the side of the story.
Well, and I think his lawyer would be good for him not to talk because, I mean, I don't have a law degree and I could cross George Zimmerman over on cross-examination. So, I mean, surely his lawyer knows that there's some things there that are not completely legitimate, but he still has to defend him to the best of his ability. And I don't begrudge him for that. But at the same token, you know, we still have a family that's grieving. And every time George Zimmerman opens his mouth, it takes them back to that night. Matter of fact, it doesn't take them back to that night because they didn't know right away. It takes them back to when they found out a couple of days later. Although the police had his cell phone and could have called the last dialed number, but they didn't do that. So, you know, it takes them back to their child laying in the morgue unidentified with nobody being around them. So every time George Zimmerman opens his mouth, it takes Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin back to that time. And that's unfair. And the thing, and I just got to go back to this. I know I shouldn't. But when we were talking about the case with Mr. Holmes out there in Colorado, media has to do a much better job of not being biased in how they present information. Because, you know, initially, and people of color always know that when they don't say what color the person is, that the person is white, because we've just kind of figured that out over the length of time. But then the photo they were showing of him was I guess was his college photo where he looks all pristine or whatnot.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And we know that most of the time the first picture you see is they mugshot. So why was this case any different that they didn't want to show us his mugshot right away?
Yeah.
I just find that to be, I mean, the media has to do a better job of not being so biased, but I digress. We were talking about George Zimmerman. But that's the same case. The media is biased with him, too. And as you stated, Sean Hannity, of course, you know, he can go on Sean Hannity's show and say these things and be unchecked. But that's no different, you know, I'm sure we'll get to this later, than when they allow Mitt Romney or his surrogates to come on these shows and say these things that everybody knows is a lie as it relates to the president, and nobody checks them on it. So
yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's all about ratings. It's not about getting at the truth. It's not about allowing people to have any sort of get any real information. It's just all about who got the story first and who's going to give the best reporting. That's all.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of really like the show that's on HBO Newsroom, because they're really trying to shift the conversation a little bit. They're trying to say that the media's job or journalist's job is to get to the truth, not take a position, not take a side, not inject their political bias into the argument, but to really get to the bottom of it with questions and the second and the third and the fourth question. And that used to be the case, but now, you said it best, is that they're just trying to be the first one to get to the story. And it was obvious when CNN reported on the healthcare law that when the Supreme Court came back, they got it wrong. And they got it wrong for almost 10, 11, 12 minutes because they wanted to be the first as opposed to wanting to get to the truth. And so, yeah, I have to agree with you 110% is that the media has to do a better job in getting to the truth and not injecting their biases into the conversation. And so I want to now go to and you mention this all the time about Lawrence O'Donnell and how he really gets to the bottom of a particular topic or a subject. So I want to play a snippet from his show. Take a listen.
Do you regret getting out of the car to follow Trayvon that night?
No, sir.
Do you regret that you had a gun that night?
No, sir.
Do you feel you wouldn't be here for this interview if you didn't have that gun?
No, sir.
You feel you would not be here?
I feel that it was all God's plan, and for me to second guess it or judge it.
Is there anything you might do differently in retrospect now that time has passed a little bit?
No, sir.
Joy, you watched the interview.
You know, and it's interesting. It wasn't so much an interview as it was Sean Hannity walking Zimmerman through a recitation of Mark O'Meara's version of his story. There was even a point where Hannity was doing about twice as much talking as Zimmerman. He would say, so you did this, and then Zimmerman would say, yes, sir. And then when Zimmerman would try to sort of explain what happened and would leave out something that we'd heard in previous Zimmerman testimony or, you know, previous testimony that's from the police reports, Hannity would supply the missing word. It was very strange. So I think for the defense, the strange thing about it is, number one, the prosecution is now going to go through this tape looking for inconsistencies between the story he told tonight on Sean Hannity's program and the stories he's told before. It's a strange thing to expose your client to. But in the release, the press release that came out before this interview, Mark O'Meara made it clear that one of his purposes in doing this interview was to get the fundraising going again. This is their audience. This is Zimmerman's sort of base, and he's gone there in a part to shore up the fundraising.
So as you can see, George Zimmerman, again, he talks about this is in God's plan, and he didn't have any regrets. It just beside me to see how he could be in this position at this stage in his in the situation.
And once again, we go back to us being a nation of principle, so we say, and built on Christian values and the teachings of Christ. And yet, I believe it's one of the Ten Commandments that states, "Thou shalt not kill." And yet, he has no regrets of killing someone. He has no thought process that had he just stayed in his car like he was instructed to do, none of this would have never happened. Because I doubt if a young man who is on his way home in the rain trying to get back to the rest of the game would and was taking his brother something, he went to the store, not even for himself, but for his brother, would have been so interested in a man in a truck that he would then go pursue the man in the truck. That's just not even logical. Those steps just don't even add up. And so, but for him to sit there and it was in God's plan, and who am I to second guess God? You know, I have a problem with that. That bothered me more than anything, because that's not of God. You out harassing people, following them around in your truck, asking and never identifying who you are, is not part of God's plan. I'm sorry. I just how it happened is hard for me to digest. And I agree with Joy when she stated that he was just, they need some money. And so the rumor had already came out earlier in the week that Sean Hannity had agreed to pay for his defense. And then there was some backpedaling on Sean Hannity's part that, no, that wasn't true. And then all of a sudden, he's getting the interview. Well, I'm sure he didn't do it for free.
We'll probably
never know, you know, but I'm sure he didn't do it for free.
Yeah, what's also interesting is that, Joy talked about the prosecution maybe combing through this information to see if they can use it, see if he contradicts himself somewhere down the line. But the reality is he was not under oath doing his interview. So what he say then cannot really be held against him, right?
No, because even when he was questioned by the police, he wasn't under oath, but
right,
he's giving a statement. So right now you on TV giving a statement as to what happened. So I can use what you say. No, they're going to be his words. They're not hearsay. So this is what you said on this day in July of 2012 on the Sean Hannity show. And more importantly, they might call Sean Hannity to the scene.
Right. Yeah, that would even be better, right? Because, again, I say I don't think they're going to allow George Zimmerman to even be on the stand. So they're going to have to use all this peripheral type of information, circumstantial type of information to try to get to the truth. So it's going to be interesting. It's time for another quick break, and we're going to be back in just a few moments, so stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dick Iuliano. President Obama is scheduled to arrive this hour in Aurora, Colorado, scene of the movie theater shooting that killed 12. In his expected 2.5-hour visit, the president will likely console victims and family members and meet with state and local officials. Aurora police say they are piecing together evidence of how accused gunman James Holmes may have planned the attack. Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verley reports.
Officials are tracking which websites Holmes used to purchase ammunition and materials used to booby-trap his apartment, trying to build a case for premeditation. Aurora Police Chief Daniel Oates.
We have the evidence of a deliberative process to commit this assault, and we have the evidence of a deliberative process in his mind to attack whoever opened the door of his apartment.
Oates isn't releasing any details about a possible motive or what Holmes is saying to investigators. Holmes will have his first court appearance Monday morning, and his defense will be allowed to inspect the theater where the shooting took place next week. For NPR News, I'm Megan Verley in Denver, Colorado.
11 people wounded by the movie theater gunman remain in critical condition. Aurora Mayor Steve Hogan told ABC's This Week that some of these victims still face major surgery.
Certainly a concern about their family. We saw some people yesterday who are still terribly injured and may not make it.
The shooting at the screening of the new Batman movie killed 12 and wounded 58. NATO and Afghan officials are investigating a shooting at a training base by an individual wearing an Afghan uniform. NPR's Sean Carberry reports the gunman was killed in the attack, but not before killing three civilian trainers.
The shooting took place on a NATO training base near Herat City in western Afghanistan. Afghan officials say the gunman was a security guard at the base. He opened fire on NATO trainers, killing three civilian contractors and wounding one more. An Afghan interpreter was also wounded. NATO officials are not yet confirming whether the gunman was a member of the Afghan security forces. If confirmed, this would be the 21st time this year that Afghan forces attacked ISAF troops or personnel. That's the same number of so-called green-on-blue attacks in all of last year. Also today, four ISAF troops were killed in two separate roadside bombing incidents. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Herat, Afghanistan.
Bombings in Iraq today have killed nearly 20 people. Bombs went off in two Sunni towns at sundown. In one attack, a car bombing about 20 miles south of Baghdad, a second car blew up as emergency responders sprang into action. 12 people were killed, and 12 miles away, roadside bombs hit an open-air market. Syrian government forces used helicopter gunships and heavy artillery today to battle against opposition fighters in the capital, Damascus. This is NPR News from Washington.
In Beijing, the heaviest rain in six decades has left at least 37 people dead. As NPR's Louisa Lim reports from the Chinese capital, 30,000 were also evacuated.
The downpour left cars submerged and bus passengers standing on their seats as the water rose. 30,000 residents of the suburbs had to be relocated because of the threat of flooding. In the place with the heaviest rain, 18 inches fell, disrupting road traffic, telecommunications, and internet access. One person died after being struck by lightning, while a policeman was electrocuted after a live wire fell into water. 12,000 people were mobilized to drain water from the streets of Beijing, and more than 400 flights were cancelled, stranding thousands at the airport. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
Israel is on alert, watching for more plots to kill Israeli citizens following last week's deadly attack on an Israeli tourist bus in Bulgaria. There's also concern for Israeli athletes at this week's opening of the London Olympics. Israeli athletes were targeted by terrorists at the 1972 Olympics in Munich. 11 were killed. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told CBS's Face the Nation Israel is vigilant, but he would not confirm any information about possible threats against the Olympics. South African Ernie Els has won the British Open, his fourth major championship. The finish was a remarkable one, a collapse by the leader, Australian Adam Scott, who bogeyed the final four holes, and Els, who birdied the 18th for 2-under-68, finishing one shot ahead of Adam Scott. I'm Dick Iuliano, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to now shift to politics for a moment. And I want to talk a little bit about Ann Romney's interview that she did on Good Morning America on Thursday. Now, she explained that her husband refused to make his tax returns available, and by saying this: "We've given all that you people need to know about and understand about our financial situation and about how we live our life. And so the election will not be decided on that. It will be decided on who will turn the economy around. And how would jobs come back to America?" So what did she mean by "you people"? And so I want to play a clip from Good Morning America, and I want you to weigh in on this. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Take a listen.
I spoke exclusively with Ann Romney about what her husband's planning. It's your voice, your vote. And I started by asking her how close her husband is to picking a running mate.
We're not quite there yet, and we're going to be there soon. There's so many good choices, and I think that's making it especially difficult.
You have said that you wanted to be somebody that your husband, they match in personality. No one knows your husband better than you. So who is that type of person?
Well, you know, I think in saying that, I was thinking of also passion for this country, being able to serve, being able to have experience, real experience. Being able to be ready day one.
Everyone wants to stay on message. You do, the Obama administration and the American people. And there seem to be so many different distractions, one being your husband and the tax returns. Both Bushes gave multiple years, 10 and 12 years. President Obama gave 7 years of tax returns. Your husband has been adamant about only the 2 years that will be released. Why will he not follow the example of others on both sides of the aisle?
You know, I think there's reason for all of these things. You know, you should really look at where Mitt has led his life and where he's been financially. He's a very generous person. We give 10% of our income to our church every year. Do you think that is the kind of person that is trying to hide things or do things? No. He is so good about it. Then when he was governor of Massachusetts, didn't take a salary in the 4 years. You know, he is a person.
Why not show that then? Why not?
Well,
why not,
you know,
because it's a moot point.
Because
and
there are
on.
So many things that will be open again for more attack. And you just want to give more material for more attack. And that's really that's just the answer. And we've given all people need to know and understand about our financial situation and about how we live our life. And so that election, again, will not be decided on that. They will be decided on who is going to turn the economy around and how our jobs are going to come back to America.
Okay. We're giving you, we're giving all that you people need to know and understand. Jimmy, what do you mean by that?
Okay. So I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say that you people was to you people in the media and not the condescension of you people, as in people that you say that to a black person, and that's just grounds to start taking off your earrings and putting some Vaseline on. But anyway, she, and Romney, and I said this last week, and I'm not, you know, maybe people heard me and maybe they didn't, but I'm so not impressed with Ann Romney. She comes off as this holier than thou person, and how does Mitt Romney think he can do what no other candidate has done in the last 30 years? What makes him so much better than everybody else? That's what I don't like. Why are you better than any of the previous people that have ran for president in the last 30 years? So if the precedent has been set that at the least you give 8, as the president did, at the most you give 12 or 15, then find yourself somewhere in the middle of that. But you definitely can't do less than. And if you had the gall and felt like, you know, you really wanted to be vice president last go round, and you gave John McCain 23 years worth, that was just to his campaign. You don't think the American people, the media, should see more than 2 years? And then the year you provided isn't even the full year. So you haven't even done what you said you were going to do. You haven't even given the full year of 2010. It's some stuff missing from it. So, I mean, but to think that they are above everybody else and that they have such, you know, standards that they don't have to lower themselves to do what everybody else has done. That President Obama, 4 years ago, released 1 year of tax returns. Would he be president?
And impeached him right now.
No. I mean, I'm saying he wouldn't even ran. He wouldn't have even got the nomination. And he's not really, you know what I'm saying? Come
right.
on, people. Give me a break. Give me a break. And
so,
the fact that he was able to do this and make these statements, even during the primary, and the media didn't challenge him. The media didn't push him. They just let him stand on stage and act all cocky like he was, you know, the end-all to be-all, and let him get away with saying what he was. Well, that was my father. Oh, okay, Mr. Romney, you don't want to do what your dad did, but you want to stand up in front of NAACP and talk about what your dad did. You can't have it both ways.
That's right. So, I mean, you said it a few minutes ago. I mean, he thinks he's above the law, above everybody else that has participated in the past. And then, moreover, I want to go back to this whole birth certificate thing. The fact that they pressed and pushed and pulled President Obama to release his birth certificate, which was, again, I think was just as insignificant as his tax return. But if the people demand it, why not show it to him? And so in a similar case, the people are demanding to see this. If he's going to be our president, why not show it? Why not, you know? Go ahead.
And you got to remember that it wasn't just the president's birth certificate. It was the long-form birth certificate.
Okay? Right.
You know, so it wasn't, we need to see your birth certificate. We want to see the long form. And then that took up traction. So you had, even on MSNBC, you had Chris Matthews stating the fact, why don't he just do it? Well, I'm waiting to hear it. Why don't y'all just tell Mitt Romney, why don't you just do it? Why you keep letting his surrogates come on television and act like this is not that big of a deal? It is a big deal. It's a big deal because it's what we're used to. It's a big deal because it's happened for the last 30 years. So if you want to be president of these United States of America, then you need to do what everybody else has done, and that's release the daggone tax returns, period. And if it comes out that you got some money hidden somewhere that you ain't supposed to have hidden, then that the chips fall where they may. But I guarantee you, he's not going to be able to keep this pompous attitude all the way to the election time, because he's going to get knocked down a few pegs.
Oh, yeah.
Simple as that.
So what I got from the interview was that she seemed to be a little bit more in control of the campaign than you would think that a wife would have in this particular situation. And what I mean by that, you know, Robin asked her about, the vice president pick. And she seems to kind of be, you know, almost on the selection committee because she's mentioned about personality and things of this nature. So it goes back to what I said earlier about him being a Manchurian candidate, by the fact that he's you really can't see his personality because other people are trying to put him in there as a puppet to do things. And so that's why it's kind of hard for him to say, I'm not selling out. I'm not going to let you know who I am, because you're never going to get to see that. That is mine and mine alone. Although I'm the president of these United States, I'm only going to give you just a superficial part of me, and that's it. And that's what I'm afraid of. If he gets into the White House.
He doesn't have any personality, Patrick. I mean, really? I mean, you really think this is an act? This man and his wife and their family, they really think just like they come off. That's who they are. They're condescending. They're uppity. They think they know more than everybody else. They think because of who they are and what their money has given them that they are better than everybody else. He believes that. When he says he's not concerned about the poor, I believe you. Yeah, I believe those words that came out of your mouth. When she says we're not giving you people anything else, she means that. She's not playing. She has no. She does not think that we are of a caliber to be questioning her or her husband about anything. So now the fact that he's giving his money to the church precludes him from being evil. Hello. Wasn't Jim Jones a part of somebody's church and all them people drunk the Kool-Aid?
Yeah, that's right.
Wasn't the Waco issue attached to somebody's religion? Hello? Mm-hmm. So we know evil people hide behind religion all the time. Slavery was held behind religion.
Yeah.
Don't act like because he's giving his money to the church that all of a sudden he's not going to hide anything. Give me a break.
So,
just had a minister and his wife go to jail for fraud down Louisiana for taking the people's money.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on now, Ann. You got to give me a better answer than that.
So what, at the end of the day, at some point, the tax discussion will go away. Who will win this fight? Will Mitt Romney release his tax records, or will this become a moot point?
What's going to happen, I think, is that there's going to be a leak. There's going to be a leak from somewhere, somebody who was part of the John McCain campaign years ago. Somebody's going to say something. It's going to be indirect. It's going to be an exclusive. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. But if Mitt Romney chooses to stay on this path and make this be an issue, and it's not that I really care, but it's the fact of the matter is the rules don't change because you Mitt Romney. These have been the rules where they have been written. Where they have been written, we know you have written rules, you have implied rules. Everybody knows that.
Yep,
and
yep.
Mr. Businessman should know that. So although he wants to say he's done what's required of him by law, you probably have what's done what's required of you by law. But we all know, if you've worked anywhere, most of us have had a clause in our performance evaluation and our performance plan that said, and all other duties as assigned.
Right.
Although I may have been hired to do A, B, and C, one day I might have to mop the floor.
Right.
Because that's a duty as assigned. So that might not be my original job, but I might have to do that. So Mitt Romney, you may have complied with the law, what is written, but there's some unwritten rules that everybody has done for the last 30 years, and you are no different than everybody else. So either he's going to do it, or his hand is going to be forced, or there's going to be a leak. I guarantee you one of those three things are going to happen, and it's either going to happen right before the convention, right around the same time he tells us who his vice presidential nominee is going to be. It's going to happen when something else is going on. Here's what I'm saying to you people.
I like that. I like that. I mean, it kind of builds the drama. And so let's say he gets to the convention, he picks a a vice president that people, you know, don't agree with, because, you know, there are some people behind the curtain that's really doing everything. You think the bomb will be dropped then? And if so, what is the repercussion? What happens if it comes out and it just destroys his candidacy? Then who takes over? Who is the backup plan? Who is the person that's going to come in and step up and says, I'm going to take this thing to the finish line?
Well, here's the thing. The word on the street is that this is leading up to a Jeb Bush nomination at the convention. That whatever is in these taxes, when they come out, he is not going to be able to continue to run, and that it's going to lead up to Jeb Bush being nominated from the floor at the convention, because it's in Tampa. So that's the word on the street. Mm-hmm. If that happens, Jeb has initially said he wasn't interested, but yeah, right, you know. But he'll only have so much time to get prepared to run against the president. I mean, to finish it out. It'll be August to October. He'll have a little bit over 60 days or whatever to be prepared to take on the president.
Yeah, do you think,
the only thing I can see happening.
Do you think the people will galvanize behind him? I mean, would he have enough support drummed up by that time to be able to try to win the White House?
Oh, yeah, because they wanted Jeb Bush to run anyway. You got to remember, Mitt Romney was never anybody's choice. Nobody's choice was Mitt Romney. So it was the Jeb Bushes, it was the Chris Christies, it was all these ancillary people that said, no, this is not my time. And so by default, they ended up with Mitt Romney because everybody else was just too daggum crazy. Michelle Bachmann, you're right. Herman Cain, seriously. Newt Gingrich, too much baggage. Rick Santorum, crazy. I mean, you know, the most sane was John Huntsman, and they treated him like a bald-headed stepchild. So yeah. out of all of them people that was running for president, the one that probably had the best chance because of how he would govern, they didn't want him. So they let Mitt Romney use all of his money and let him throw his money around and got rid of everybody. And he wants to talk about a negative campaign. He had one of the most negative campaigns during the primary.
This is
against
true.
Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum.
And President Obama.
Right. No, but I'm saying he's saying that the president is being negative.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you can dish it out, but you can't take it. Oh, right. Well. As Karen Finney said, Mitt Romney and his campaign need to put their big boy. No, it wasn't Karen Finney. It was the DNC chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She said they need to put their big girl and big panties on and stop whining.
So obviously he got some reprieve because of the Colorado shootings and an unfortunate incident that happened. But because of that, he was able to take a breather and try to regroup. So once this Colorado situation goes away, we find out he goes to trial and those things, it kind of fades to black. How does Mitt Romney regain his footing? Because he tried to, you know, to do this I'm a bad boy campaign, but he was repeating what President Obama was saying at the same time trying to say he shouldn't be saying it. I mean, so obviously he still doesn't have his footing under him. So this gives him a couple of days, a week or so, to get his faculties back together. What do you think his message is moving forward?
If he doesn't come out with his taxes, it doesn't matter.
You think people are going to have full court press on it?
Because the president is going to have a full court press on releasing the taxes, going to have a full court press on buying capital, and that's just it. We don't have to talk about nothing else until you can explain to the American people whether or not you was actually still president, CEO of Bain Capital when all of these jobs began to be going overseas, period. Answer the question. The longer you start, you tiptoe around it and try to act like you don't have to answer the question, the more curious people become. And you know we're a nation of conspiracy theories anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, everybody has their own theory as to what really happened. So you got these these official documents that say you were, but you're saying you wasn't. You have people saying, well, I talked to them, but you say you wasn't. You say yourself that when you ran for governor that you told the people you came back to Massachusetts every so often for meetings, and that's why you were still considered a resident. So either you were or you weren't. It's really just that simple. And I don't know why the media is allowing him to get away with this cat and mouse game when we have all the evidence. It's just like we don't need another study. We don't need any more evidence from Mitt Romney to show that he was at Bain Capital when all hell was breaking loose, period. And he reaped all the benefits of it, period.
Yeah. That is true.
And you was able to write off $40,000 on your tax returns for a dadgum horse. We know that. That's what you don't want us to see.
Well,
you probably 1 year
yeah.
didn't pay any taxes because of all the loopholes you used.
And I think that is the main reason he will not release his tax work. I asked you, you know, what you thought would happen, and you kind of said that, you know, you think there's going to be a leak and somehow the people are going to get the information one way or the other. You know, I really believe that he's taking a calculated risk to say, look, I will take the heat for people continuing to ask me for my tax return, just like President Obama continued to take the heat for a few years about his birth certificate. He knew that he was, of course, a resident. He knew that he didn't have any problems, but he maintained or he held onto the long form for many, many, many years before, you know, releasing them, right? Mitt Romney is going to do the same thing. He thinks that he can potentially hold these things in the balance and just take the flak and just try to move on, try to continue to deflect and shift the conversation as long as people he's going to try to make his voice louder than the voice asking for the tax returns.
But see, the difference between him and President Obama is that President Obama didn't even have to release the short form birth certificate.
Because there wasn't no presidents for it, right? Nobody, they didn't ask anybody else for it, right?
Exactamundo. This man hasn't even done what everybody else has done.
Right.
So that's why this isn't going to go away. That's why I think it's a bad – he's taking a risk, and it's unnecessary. He needs to get this – because if he wants to talk about his experience as a CEO and how he can bring jobs, then we need to talk about who you are in your totality, Governor Romney. We can't talk about you – I mean, let's talk about your governorship in the state of Massachusetts. Let's talk about that. I mean, you know, when we talked about the president, they covered when he was in college. They covered his time at Reverend Wright's church. They covered his time as a community organizer, his time in the state Senate, his time in the U.S. Senate. We covered him as in his totality. So you don't get to be covered in the area that you want to be covered in. It doesn't work that way. You are running for the highest office of the land that is under scrutiny. Everybody wants to be president. Everybody wants to know the president. And you think you're just going to be able to skate in because you're fair-skinned and your name is Mitt Romney? I don't think so. And if the media fails to do their job, shame on us for not holding the media accountable.
I have to agree with you on that. Well, it's time to take another break. It's time to pay some bills. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask FEMA, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Nehemiah 8 and 6, and Ezra blessed the Lord, the great God, and all the people answered, Amen. Amen. Lifting up their hands, they bowed their heads and worshiped the Lord with their faces to the ground. When we receive a word from the Lord, our answer should be Amen. Let the church say Amen. Let the church say Amen. Let the church say Amen. God has spoken, so let the church say Amen. Yeah. Let the church, let them say Amen. If you believe the word, let the whole church say Amen. God has spoken, so let the church say Amen. Lift your hands, lift your hands. God has spoken, so let the church church say Amen.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. That was just our praise break. And we're going to try to continue to keep that going week in and week out. You know, with all of the stuff that's going on throughout the United States and the world in general, we want to just take a time every now and then just to pause for the cause, if you will. So that was Let the Church Say Amen by Andre Crouch featuring Bishop Marvin Winans. So let's now shift to something Jima talked about earlier about conspiracy theories. She said that, you know, we're a big conspiracy theory nation. And I want to talk about a conspiracy theory, if you will, that's associated with something that the Los Angeles Times is reporting. CNN was reporting out of Los Angeles saying that Paris Jackson waited at home Sunday hoping for a phone call from her grandmother, the woman who has cared for her since her father, Michael Jackson, died 3 years ago. Yes, My grandmother is missing. Paris Jackson, 14, tweeted Sunday morning. I haven't spoke with her in a week. I want her home now. A nephew reported Jackson family matriarch Catherine Jackson, 82, went missing late Saturday after her grandchildren were unable to get in touch with her for a week. It is the latest chapter in a messy dispute between several of Jackson's children and her advisors over her finances and legal affairs. Jima, what's going on with the Jackson 5 family?
Well, I mean, I'd say they're still in their grieving mode. I don't think they've completely grieved the loss of Michael. I'd say I don't know if Miss Catherine ever did, because she had to be so strong for those children. Let's remember, she is 80-some years old, and this should be a time where she is resting and sitting back and enjoying life and not raising some children, which are some teenagers at this point. The latest is that she is under doctor's care and orders with her other daughter, Rebe, down in Arizona. So she is supposed to be resting from exhaustion at this point. So it's not that she's missing. Maybe she just didn't tell everybody where she was going for this, for this reason. The Jacksons have been in the media since they became the Jacksons.
Right.
And Michael's death put them all right back smack dab into the middle of it all. As you alluded to, there's been concerns about his will as to whether or not the last will was forged or not. There's been some back and forth on that as to when the will was allegedly signed, that he could not have signed it because he was not even in town. He was, as reported by Reverend Sharpton, he was with Reverend Sharpton in New York at the time that they say the will was signed. So the family is wanting to get rid of those people that are the executives of the estate because they don't feel like they're doing due diligence in serving the needs of the family. So it's sad that this is happening like it is out in the front for all of us to see. I just pray that Miss Catherine gets the strength that she needs, because what that family could not deal with is the loss of Miss Catherine. That would send them all over the edge. And so I just pray that she gets the strength that she needs to come on back home, and then somebody else needs to take care of those children.
Yeah, because, I mean, she's the glue, right? I mean, she has always been the glue with all the chaos that's going on with their family, especially the family of that size and all of the celebrity. Mm-hmm. And all of the other issues that goes on. And then, I mean, she's approaching an age where that should be a concern. And so when I hear this term exhaustion, like I did with Jackson Jr., it makes me wonder, is there an underlining issue? Do you think there's something else going on?
Yeah, people of color don't get help when they need it. So they wear themselves out. You know, that was a conversation that was going on over the week on Twitter about the mental health issues in the black community and how we don't talk about anything. So we just keep going and going and going and going and going, and our health is failing. We're not paying attention to the warning signs of what's happening in our relationships. We're not paying attention to the warning signs of what's happening in our health with our children. And we just keep going and going until we push ourselves, till we fall out. And so until we start, and like I stated, I don't think any of them have really grieved Michael's death. And we grieve different ways. I'm not saying it's going to all look the same. But, you know, I don't know if anybody's taking advantage of going to go talk to a person about what they feel, about what they really feel, you know. And they've stated Miss Catherine is 80-some years old, and she hasn't probably had the full range of dealing with it all, because she's had to make sure the kids were in some sort of stable environment, probably the most stable they've been in their entire life. So that's it. You know, the symptom is the exhaustion. You know me and symptoms. The symptom is the exhaustion. But let's talk about what's driving that. What's driving that is our failure to go and seek out counsel when we need it the most. And we wait until we've reached a point of no return, where things are crashing in on us, where we're making illogical decisions, whether that's having an affair, and that affair produces a child, whether that's stealing, whether that's fraud, whether that whatever it is, you know, then all of a sudden we're exhausted. Well, you was exhausted 2 years ago.
Right. And so and it's now just playing itself out and or it's manifesting itself in just these crazy ways. So
right.
Is she getting help now, you believe? Or is it just a matter of her just needing to get away just for a while? Because sometimes, I mean, although you're right, we don't address our issues early on, but sometimes we just need to get away, especially when you have this high-stress media paparazzi type of society, you know, and you have that status. Sometimes you just need to go take a break.
Right, I agree with that. And I'm hoping that the time that she's down in Arizona that she's away from the stresses of her everyday life, which is just caring for somebody else. I mean, at 82, you just want to care for yourself. I mean, I'm 43 and just want to care for myself some days. So I can imagine how she feels at 82. Like, I didn't stay around here all this time to have
right.
to do this all over again. You
to
know?
Raise
so,
more kids, right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I want to shift now. You know, we do a little sports segment pretty much every week, and we try to talk about, you know, the relevant issues. Today, it has been reported that the actual trophy, the statue, I should say, for Penn State is going to be torn down. Is that true?
It's gone.
Wow.
It has been removed. They lifted it up on some sort of forklift type thing, covered it up in some plastic, and it is no longer in front of the stadium at Penn State. That is correct. The statue of Joe Paterno is no longer there, and the word on the street is that the NCAA will be coming out with its penalties tomorrow. So this story is not over yet, which it should not be. According to the White House, the president states that removing the statue was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we stated last week, if Coach Paterno was as involved as it has now been reported, then, you know, there's no way that statue should be there if that statue got up any time during when all these things were happening.
Right.
So, yes, the statue has been removed.
So the NCAA announced Sunday they will levy corrective and punitive measures, as you alluded to, against Penn State in the wake of the child sex abuse scandal involving Jerry Sandusky, and a scathing report that found school leaders covered up allegations against the now-convicted former assistant football coach. The NCAA released no details, saying that they would be disclosed on Monday morning by NCAA President Mark Emmert and Ed Ray, the chairman of the NCAA's executive committee. So last week we had a caller call in from Pennsylvania saying that he thought that Paterno was the big fish. Right, he was the one that everybody would be satisfied if they got rid of because A, he's dead, right? And then B, there's nobody else that has to take the fall because he's gone. And people say, well, he took the football program with them. You can't really point the finger. You can't get any money, anything along those lines. But do you believe he is really the big fish? Is
no,
he the
I'm
one?
Gonna... Go ahead. I'm going to push it even further and agree with a person I was reading on Twitter to say that it should even go all the way up to the current governor, who at the time was the president of the university, because he knew as well. So, you know, trying to appease and put it all on Joe Paterno did. So whatever, you know, punishment he would get, he in the grave, and there's nothing we can do to him. But to that governor that was the president of the university or was on the board or whatever he was, he needs to be held accountable. And to anybody that was in administration at that time that knew who they say Joe went to and told whoever those went to people were, and they didn't do anything about it, they allowed it to continue to happen, or they swept it under the rug, then, yes, they all need to be dealt with. They need to be fired, and they need to be sued. If I was one of them children, a parent, I would be suing everybody, police departments, because they knew whoever the police chief was at that time who didn't file a report, they need to be – I mean, everybody needs to have some sort of criminal charge against them.
So
we
this
can't
really,
do nothing with Joe Paterno.
Right, so this really is a big smokescreen, right? And so other people can get out from under the wrath that could potentially come to destroy their lives, because they're living, they have, they have relationships, they have, you know, status, if you will, and this could potentially take a whole lot of people down if they don't give the fall guy. I mean, if they don't give Paterno as being the fall guy. So the statue, by taking that down, is kind of giving people, here you go. Here's the big fish right here. But the reality is, it may be a lot more to it than this. So let's say hypothetically then that they take the trophy down, I mean, take the statue down, which they has, and they give up Joe Paterno, which they has. Do you think this goes away? Is it over when the NCAA comes down next week and says, here is your penalty? You've taken the trophy, taken a statue down, we're done. Everybody else get to pretty much hide.
It shouldn't be. And I think if the media does its job, once again, if the media does its job, it is going to push for more information on those people that were around during the time that did nothing. That's if the media does its job. Even if the media doesn't do its job, and I'm a parent of a survivor, I'm still suing the person that was in that seat. So although he might be governor now, I'm suing you from when you was president of the university. So the families can't be okay with it just being about Joe Paterno either. They've got to push the envelope a little harder.
So that begs the question then, in the event that this goes forward and they do impose some type of penalty, will Joe Paterno now still hold the title of the winningest coach?
He shouldn't. He should not, because he got those wins under I'm not going to say false pretenses, but during a time when he was allowing some very heinous activity to happen on his watch. So there's no way, if he had reported it, we don't know, because if he had reported it, maybe students wouldn't have even gone to that school and his football program wouldn't have been as winning as it was. Who knows? But what we do know is it all happened on his watch, so some of those wins need to be forfeited, and that title needs to go back to Coach Eddie Robinson of being the winningest coach in college football.
So you think they're going to go that far, though? I mean, in a lot of cases, they try to preserve something, especially on the record books. Do you think they're going to go that far to take those wins away?
If Penn State wants to truly show that it is trying to right a wrong, they would do everything. They would do everything that will make them look better to groups of people, not just certain segments of people. They need to look right for everybody. They need to help that community to do right, because that community would not have had all of those things happening if this story had a broke 20 years ago when it first came out, or 10 years ago, for that matter, when things first started happening. So, you know, somebody has to recognize that this is bigger than just the football program, but a whole community was affected by this.
Well, so football season is right around the corner, and so are you ready? Are you prepared? And August is like next month, a few weeks from now.
Yes, sir. I'm very prepared. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So how Dallas going to do this year?
Oh, man, seriously, you know, I can have no expectations for Dallas because they let me down every year, so I don't have any. Whatever they do would be better than what I thought. How about that? Because I have no trust in their quarterback. I have no trust in our defensive line to do anything constructive. I just don't. I mean, Tony Romo's still out playing golf right now, and I think he ought to be somewhere reading the playbook. But, you know. Who am I? You know, I'm just a fan.
I have to agree with you on that.
Right, exactly.
All right, we're closing on. We're coming up on the end of the show. You have any final comments?
We lost one this week who I respected a lot in the rap world, and that was Miss Melody. She was with Boogie Down Productions, ex-wife of KRS-One. That was kind of, and I haven't been able to locate exactly how she died, but that was kind of a blow, I think, because she was a pioneer in the rap game. So I hate that she's gone once again, another one that's just gone too soon. We do know that Tamika Usher's ex-wife did her son actually stopped breathing, and so he did pass away. So we want to lift up her and his father in prayer, yeah, as well as Usher in that process, since he was a part of his life for a little while. And you know, it's just so much going on and so much happening. We know the president will be speaking live from Colorado here in about an hour or so this evening. He is now visiting with some of the families at the hospital. So he is there right now in Aurora, Colorado, visiting. So praying that he can provide them with just a little bit of comfort on a day of such tragedy that we've experienced over the last couple of days. I do know that violence is on the rise. The United States has more people killed by gun violence, I think, than any other in the country, which is crazy. And we just really need to think about, when we talk about gun control, maybe we need to change the messaging on that and you know, take a look at somebody has to define what is an assault weapon used for and why one should have one. We need to have one definition of terrorists and not 20,000 of them. Michelle Bachmann, we didn't get to bring this up, but Michelle Bachmann made a claim about the aid to Secretary Clinton, and this lady now has been receiving death threats based on what Michelle Bachmann put out there. And so here's a woman who's a mother of young children who has done nothing but serve this country and serve it well, and now she's receiving death threats because Michelle Bachmann wants to say we're being overrun by the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, just nonsense like that keeps people in fear and keep us away from one another as opposed to trying to help and support one another. So I just say be on the lookout for any and everything. It's close to voting time. Make sure you have your documentation in place. Make sure you can get your documentation. You can get to the polls. I know at my church, at Faith Missionary Baptist Church, we have a member that is able to get people registered and help you get your address changed. So seek out people in your community that can be able to help you. So you don't want to wait too late, and you don't want the time to get by you. and then you look up and you don't have what it takes. So, you know, just be vigilant, stay alert, stay aware. And stay cool. It's been hot here in Texas. Temperature in the car the other day said 106. I just talked to my mom in Kansas, and their upper is 108, 110 degrees. And that's hot for Kansas. So,
mm-hmm.
I, you know, let's pray for the people that have to work out in these elements, and also pray for people that don't have air. You know, some of us take air for granted. We go a day without it, and we think life is going to completely fall apart. Mm-hmm. I'm very guilty of that. I have to have it, and I just, you know, I ask the Lord to forgive me when I get that way, because there are some that's never had the luxury. And so just remember those that are less fortunate as you walk through your homes today. Remember those that are less fortunate. And on another note, we had a great summer program at Faith Missionary Baptist Church, our summer reading and feeding program. It was awesome. We were averaging several days over 60 kids, ranging from ages 4 to 18, and they had a ball. We really had a great, great time this year, and I'm just looking forward to next summer. And I did go to my conference that was hosted by the National Association for Blacks and Criminal Justice, where I did a workshop entitled Managing the Ship Between Relationship and Leadership. It was very well received based on the comments I received from from the people that were participating. So I enjoyed it, and I look forward to being able to do something like that again real soon.
Yeah, I've seen you do your thing, and I applaud your efforts. I mean, managing the ship, the title itself, and talking about relationships and leadership and all of the wonderful things based on your experience, your background, your education, your MPA, I mean, your leadership certificates. I mean, so to be able to share that with others and to give that and to kind of help the community in your field along, you know, I can do nothing but applaud you and appreciate you for that. I know they did as well.
Thank you.
All right, that's the end of our show. It was another great show. I really appreciate you doing all the things that you do. You really bring a lot to the show, and I hope to continue to have you be a part of the show.
All right.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. And of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter. And that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it's written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
This is serious music we are dealing with here.